If you are like many New Yorkers, you get on the train each morning, you fight for a seat, and then you settle in to defend it. But 25 years ago, the Poetry Society of America and the MTA decided they wanted your ride to feel a little bit less like hand-to-hand combat, and they did that with poetry. The Poetry in Motion project started with just 4 poems back in 1992, scattered throughout subway cars around the city, and now hundreds of poems have been published just like this. And some of them have been anthologized in a new book, The Best of Poetry in Motion, celebrating 25 years on subways and buses. It is published by W.W. Norton and Company and edited by Alice Quinn, the former poetry editor at The New Yorker and the executive director of the Poetry Society of America. Alice, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, before we get started, I want to say this is a public program and we know that you guys have feelings about it. So we want to hear from you. If you have a story about a time a subway poem moved you, or if you have a poem you want to suggest, give us a call. The number is 212-433-9692. So, Alice, I want to start with this, which is New York wasn't the first city to do this, right?
No, London actually was the inspiration for this program. And it's interesting because the Poetry Society was founded in 1910, and the inspiration for that was the Poetry Society of England, which was founded in 1909. And in this instance, my predecessor, Elise Passion, who's a poet and the daughter of Maria Tallchief, was in England on a tour of readings of Native American poets, because she is herself part Native American. And she was on the London Underground, and she saw a Michael Drayton poem, and she really thought this would be great to have the Poetry Society bring this to the MTA. And at the same time, legend has it, Alan Keeper, who was head of MTA Transit at that time, was in London too. He had the same idea. And I don't know exactly how he made his way to Elise or Elise made her way to him, but it was a match made in heaven and it instantly took.
Did they have the same goal for what they wanted to do?
Yes, they did. I mean, I think that they felt it was a complete natural to it's the Poetry Society's mission to place poetry in unexpected places and at the crossroads of American life. We have a big program up at the New York Botanical Garden, and we have poems in conjunction with each new exhibit up there. And, it's Billy Collins really sets this up beautifully
in the beginning of the book.
In his interview. Do you think we should quote a tiny little bit of that?
Sure.
He begins by saying, "It's a rainy Tuesday in February and you're riding to work on a downtown 6 train. I should add that you do not like your job." Your boss, that's how he thinks of himself, has a habit of poking his head into your cubicle to look over your shoulder at your screen. In the afternoon, he reeks of pastrami. And then Billy says, and then you see this little cluster of words.
Do you remember the first time you saw a poem on the subway?
Well, I've been in New York 40 years, I probably saw the earliest ones because they were there 25 years ago. So it would have been, I think, the Emily Dickinson "Hope is the Thing with Feathers That Perches in the Soul" and a swatch of "Crossing Brooklyn Ferry."
Were there any rules about what these poems had to be like?
Well, everybody takes the subway, so you want poems that are going to speak to all genders and ethnicities. Molly Peacock, the president of the PSA, made that very clear right from the beginning. All ages, young people, older people. And I remember seeing a woman memorize Loreen Nedeker's poem, Wilderness, on the number one train.
On the what you saw her mouthing it to herself?
She was just reading it over and over and mouthing it. And it's a very strong poem. You are the man, you are my other country, you are the prickly pear, you are the sudden violent storm, the torrent to raise the river, to float the wounded doe. And I thought, that woman loves a very difficult person.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, it spoke to her.
So I want to go to a caller, someone who's called in and actually has a suggestion for a poem. Could we go to caller number 2?
Sure.
Carrie, are you there?
So I'd like to recommend Derek Mahan's poem, "Everything is Going to Be All Right."
I love his poetry.
Why did that poem speak to you?
Well, I think that we can all use a bit of consolation when we're on the subway. And it's just I could read you a few lines from it, which, you know, he would read it far better than I.
Oh, this is a great recommendation, Carrie.
Do it. Read it.
So it begins, "How should I not be glad to contemplate the clouds clearing beyond the dormer window and a high tide reflected on the ceiling? There will be dying, but there is no need to go into that. The poems flow from the hand unbidden, and the hidden source is the watchful heart."
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That's
beautiful, Carrie.
I really enjoyed it. So how are the poems chosen?
Well, we at the Poetry Society read and read and read and read. And I like to say we send 30 poems over to the MTA, to Sandra Bloodworth, MTA Arts and Design, and her team. And some time elapses and a couple of calls from us. And one of them will say, "Well, we really like this one poem." And then we get to work and we find another 25 and send them over, and they take two from the previous batch.
Oh, that's hard work.
No, but I love it because it tells us that they're reading and rereading. They don't toss the ones that they don't immediately respond to.
You know, I was wondering how you think of the job of suggesting poetry based on what's happening in the world. Like, I wonder if after 9/11 you thought about the job of the poems on the subway differently. I wonder if you think about the poems on the subway differently now.
Well, there are a few instances in which poems, which we selected at The New Yorker, have also appeared in this program. And one of them was Adam Zagajewski's Just Children, which we ran in The New Yorker after 9/11, which I thought was, well, it was very typically profound mid-20th century Polish poetry of witness, but it focused on children. And it should we read that one?
Yes, let's do it. Let's find it in the book. Do you know where page it is?
Yep. Just Children. It was just children playing in the sand, accompanied by the narcotic scent of blooming lindens, don't forget. Just children, but after all, the devil and the minor gods and even forgotten politicians who'd broken all their promises were also there and watched them with unending rapture. Who wouldn't want to be a child for the last time?
Huh. So how did you choose the 100 poems for this book?
Well, I think there have been in the New York program, and this program has been all around the country, in Baltimore and Los Angeles, and Jacksonville and Fort Collins and Boston, many other places. But this book is all about the New York Poetry in Motion program, and there have probably been 300 to 350 poems. There have been two previous anthologies, so we didn't want too much overlap.
Right.
So that took care of one layer of selection. And then we just tried for a good range, as we do every year.
You mentioned that there are poetry programs in other cities, so I'm curious how you choose the poems differently based on where they're going.
Well, there's a program in Nashville, actually, that is the most localized. They choose the poems. They choose a lot of songs because it's Nashville. One of the poems a couple of years ago was written by a group of women in a home for former prostitutes. Some of the poems are by teenagers. I mean, we love it when people go off on their own. But we do have a strong pool of poems now from these 25 years nationally.
I'm Mary Harris. I'm speaking to Alice Quinn with the Best of Poetry in Motion from W.W. Norton and Company. I want to go to another caller because she has a good story about this program. Could we go to caller number one, Patty? Patty, you there?
Yep. I'm so excited about this show. I never called in, but I've always wanted to call in. We can't turn the radio on, right, in the house?
Yeah, don't turn it on.
Don't turn the radio on. Okay, I'll put it on speaker.
So what's your story?
My daughter's home from college, so she's very excited about this. So can you hear me?
We can.
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you, Patty.
Oh, okay. So back in, like, right when, about probably when it started, I guess around 1993, I had been in a relationship for a long time, but it had broken up. And then my current husband who I had broken up with, if you can follow this, was on the or on the bus. I think he was on the bus, and he noticed a poem from this program by Thomas Gunn, and it was, I guess, a little excerpt or something, or maybe the whole poem. Their relationship consisted in discussing if it existed.
That's the whole poem, by the way.
That's the whole poem? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not so the most upbeat.
So much of what our relationship was like, what it was going on. Then he called me after 4 years and said, I saw this poem. And now we're married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for the Poetry in Motion program.
Oh, that's great.
Brought us together.
That is great. You know, I have a favorite from this collection that I'm going to read. It's called Scaffolding. It's sort of this similar theme. Masons, when they start upon a building, are careful to test out the scaffolding, make sure that planks won't slip at busy points, secure all ladders, tighten bolted joints. And yet all this comes down when the job's done, showing off walls of sure and solid stone. So if, my dear, there sometimes seem to be old bridges breaking between you and me, never fear. We may let the scaffolds fall, confident that we have built our wall. And it's Seamus Heaney. And I just, I love...
Such a tribute to a marriage.
Yeah, it really is. It says so much about change and how we change and stay the same. And it can really reach you at a time. You know, you mentioned you have a program at the Botanic Garden. Where else would you put poetry if you could, if you had your druthers?
Oh, my goodness. You know, sometimes I think of an art project that I absolutely loved. It was by Ellen Harvey, called the New York Beautification Project.
Oh, tell me about it.
In 1999, for a year and a half, she painted beautiful little oval oil paintings, about 5 by 7 inches, on graffiti sites. She loved graffiti. And all the way up in High Bridge Park, and on girders under bridges, and on trash receptacles, and on fire alarm boxes. She painted these kind of Nicolas Poussin, Claude Lorrain, European landscape paintings. Exquisite.
So it was like a window.
Yeah, and it was just a gift to the city. So I sometimes fantasize the same kind of move, just putting the poems in odd spots. But it's also lovely that people can depend upon them in the subway. I mean, there are many, many people who have never known a time when there weren't poems on the subways and buses.
Yeah,
and
my
that's
kids
a great
included.
Thrill.
Yeah. You know, when the program started, riding the subways was pretty different. People weren't like all immersed in their phones, and it was just a different thing. And I wonder how you think about changing the program 25 years in. Do you ever think about new ways to do it?
Well, Sandra Bloodworth at MTA Arts and Design did that in 2012, and her team. She decided that we should, instead of having a beautiful tile banner on top of the poems, which had been the traditional design, she would match art that they had commissioned since 1985 with poems. So now the poems appear with little pieces of art, or the entire work of art, from art that you can also recognize in the stations from Astoria to Brooklyn.
And it's so interesting. You have a poet tell a story in the beginning of this book that he got so much reaction to seeing his poet, and it was Jeffrey Yang, that people wanting to put it in movies, people just calling to say they saw it. And it makes me think, like, do you want to be published, or do you want to be published on the subway in some ways?
Loved it. He said it was astonishing. A philosopher started a blog thread. And I love the fact that he said a nun wrote him a glowing letter. He said random people posted stills of it, and a film director. Director, based a little bit of his movie on it, and a musician set it to music. And anyway, he was totally thrilled. And there was a wonderful poem many people in New York may remember, it called Heaven. And I cannot tell you how many people have read that at the funerals of people whom they've loved. And Patrick Phillips has gotten tremendous response.
And they found it on the subway.
And they found it in the subway. And Tracy K. Smith's poem about just starting out in New York, the one that talks about feeling so impoverished and then getting
and then your paycheck
payday
comes. I still remember it. I remember seeing it in the subway.
Having roast chicken and red wine like everyone else.
I want to go to one more call. Number two, Lev in Port Washington. Are you there?
Yes. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Tell us your story.
Okay. So I met a homeless poet a few years back who was living at the time in the Broadway and Lafayette F train station. And he's a very special person to me. I bought a portfolio of his work, and on the cover of that portfolio, he wished me good luck. He almost prophesized in a way, let this be a good omen for things to come for you. And it's important for me now. I think about him very often. I didn't encounter him again at the Broadway Lafayette station, but I recently saw him around St. Mark's. And it's very important for me to get his name out there. His name is Donald Green. And I would really, you know, if I'm not sure if he enjoys being homeless, but he's a very special person, and I want him to be known.
Well, it's cold out there. I hope he's staying warm right now. And thank you for calling in and acknowledging what he did for you. That's really special. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. So I just want to thank you for joining us. I feel like this program is, it's touched so many people, as we can see from all the people calling in. I'm Mary Harris. I've been speaking with Alice Quinn, the executive director of the Poetry Society of America. Her book is The Best of Poetry in Motion, celebrating 25 years on subways and buses. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mary.
Up next, Stephen Stoll, a professor of history at Fordham University. He's going to join us to discuss his new book, Ramp Hollow, The Ordeal of Appalachia. This is Midday on WNYC. We will be right back.